And welcome back to Dr. Drill's Making Motivation podcast, where it is our mission to honor interesting and authentic people, to tell their stories, and to put smiles on faces and a little bit of fire under the asses of the masses. Today is a very special day, my friends. I've got we had a little special operations mission, a little covert op here, where my good friend Sean Gates, from back in the first battalion, 6th Marines Day, has been surprised and ambushed by my good friend Robert Nunn and Adron Presley. And I appreciate everybody's willingness to come out here and have a conversation today. How's everybody doing?
Good, brother. Thanks for having us.
Doing great, brother.
Look at Adron. I screwed up. You know, it's 11 o'clock in Mississippi, and so I said noon, and I didn't account for that. So I apologize, but he jumped right on. He's heading out to lunch with his family. And Nunn's coming back. We're going to redeem ourselves because the audio was a little weak on the previous podcast with he and I and Shane Oster. So today we're supposed to be talking with Gates, and we would definitely want to focus on him and why he joined the Corps and a little bit about his experiences. And he's going to share all that with us. And then we're just going to go, hey, remember when from back in the day. So just for the viewer, all four of us served in 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, Charlie Company, 2nd Platoon, for pretty much our entire enlistment. And so we have not spent a significant amount of time with one another or seen each other at all in some cases for approximately 30 years. And so the whole purpose of these podcasts with the Marines is to reconnect and compare notes and just share the love, because even though we have been separated by the miles and our individual lives, there's a lot of love that persists and a whole lot of stories. I think it's very helpful for us to tell these stories. So, Gates, what's up, my brother? Tell us what you've been up to. You're from West Virginia, am I right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, West Virginia. And I guess going back, you said what drove me to join the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
So in high school, I knew I wasn't going to go to college. If I went to college, I was going to do dumb shit. I was going to flunk out, and I was going to end up in the military anyway. So let's just cut that out. And so I tried to go in the Army in the medical field, and I went up to MEPS in Columbus, Ohio, like 3 times. No MOSs. So I'm over to the city park, which is actually right behind me a couple blocks. And I'm over there one night hanging out in high school, and a couple of my buddies said, hey, we're going to the Marine Corps, Gates. You want to go with us? I said, hell no, that shit's too tough for me. And a couple weeks later, I'm signing the papers. So, of course, we went to basic, the three of us, the same platoon, 2084. And my buddy, Nate Secoy, was online directly across from me. Well, he got blisters on his heels and got cellulitis real bad. And he just passed out one day. Well, the dude ended up being recycled, and he spent almost 6 months on Paris Island, and he stuck it out, went in open contract. So that dude went in open contract and ended up like a firefighter at Cherry Point.
Yeah.
And the other guy I went with, he retired as well. So, so we did our time. And then like, you and I were talking, OB, we, got back June 6th from Okie. June 8th, I was out of there on terminal leave. And I mean, it just happened so quick. And you think at the time, oh, hell, I'll see those guys here soon. And here we are 30 years later.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, comparing notes there, getting everybody else involved. You guys remember that that moment? Now, I know, Presley, I know you were a six-year man.
That's
so
right.
So I did talk to, I talked to Pudge and Rumpler a month or so ago, and he was talking about how you and him had gone over to SOI. So you didn't really have the parting is such sweet sorrow experience, but I know Nunn, he was out. You got out a little bit before us, didn't you, Nunn?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I had extended to go on that, Okie trip.
Okay. So you came back and then same thing. You got out of Dodge, right?
Yep. I think I ran off base.
Presley, how did you feel when we all returned from Okie And I know that, you know, you did the 6 year, you had 2 more years to go. So that was kind of, I think Pudge said that when we all got out after we got back from Oki, he was driving up, you know, commuting back home with or swooping back home with his wife and kid. And he just started crying for like however many miles, because we were all going to be separated, us who had been together for so long. So what was that like for you, Adron?
Well, OB, it was quick. I mean, you know, we got back, and then the next thing I knew, I was transferred to SOI, which also gave me another 2 years with another group of Marines, which would be another group of brothers. So truly, I've got, you know, two sets of families, the one at 1-6 and the one at SOI, which was something maybe y'all didn't get to experience, but it was a blessing to go over there and be, you know, reunited with another group of Marines, which kind of kept it going. And it wasn't, I mean, I missed, but I fell right back into another training off. And then, you know, by the time you turn around, you're back full going, you know, full blast. So yeah, it was just a quick turnaround for me. And right back, you know, right back on boots on the ground running.
Yeah. All right. That's good to hear that you didn't miss us much.
Hey. Oh, I got some good remember when stories about you.
Let's do it. Let's do it right now. Let's waste no time.
So at one point we're at the second set of barracks we were at, and I forget who I was in the room with, but Presley was in another room. So I wake up earlier than normal because somebody's pounding on my door. I'm like, what the hell is this? And it's Presley, and he's standing there, and no shirt on, just tighty whities. And he's standing there, and he's holding his arm. Gates, I think I broke my arm. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I look down, and it is obviously broken. And I'm like, oh, shit. I said, that is definitely broken. I said, go back in there, get dressed. And I said, we'll go to the company office. So I guess, what was it? Your roommate, was that Bryant was your roommate, came in the middle of the night and moved that chair from your top bunk?
Yeah, it was a guy. I can't remember. It wasn't Bryant. I can't remember who it was. He was from Australia. And
check your video, brother.
My bad. I had to lay it down. So yeah. He laid the chair down here. He pulled the chair up there close to the bed at night, and I jumped down that morning to go pee or something, and because I hit that thing and hit the floor, and it was Katie bar the door then.
So then they had – we went to the company office, and then they had me taken to the emergency room there on base. And we're sitting there, and he's, you know, getting an IV, and he's looking at me because he doesn't like needles. Well, then he's just watching me, and I see all this blood start running out.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, shit. And he goes, what is it, Gates? What is it? I said, there is blood everywhere.
Yeah, I'm still petrified of needles to this day.
Oh, man. But it was a couple weeks later, Presley came home with me. He has that cast on, and a buddy of mine was like, hey, man, can you do me a favor? It's going to rain, and my grandpa needs help putting in hay. And I was like, yeah, I'll help. And Presley's like, yeah, he threw hay all day with one arm.
Just a good fellow, Presley. You're a good man. You got a remember when story about Presley or Gates?
Man, the one with Presley I remember the most is when he'd get pissed off. And that was about one of the only cuss words he'd say is pissed off. But his voice would go from, you know, where he's at normal to, like, you and ho.
I remember Presley'd say, he'd go, I hate you, Oberst. I said, no, you don't hate me, man. Come on. I hate you. Yes, I do.
I'm gonna fucking kill you.
I remember that time you and I think you were in the you're playing golf inside the room. Or you're swinging a club and it's
yeah, smashed the window. Yeah, it went through the window, man. Golly. That was fixing to go on float. It was like right there before we was going on the med float, man. I swung that club and went through that window, I was freaking out. I'm like, dude, I'm fixing to go to jail. Here we go. You know,
no consequences.
It all worked out.
Yeah. Presley, you got a Remember When story?
You there? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have a Remember When story?
Oh, man. OB, you know, I sit here, I'm thinking back of those days, man, and a lot of stories, OB, a lot of stories, a lot of good times, but just the lifelong friendships, man, is one of the biggest things. Talking about back when, you know, it was back when, but even today, if I needed y'all, I know you'd be here.
Yeah.
And I guess that's my back when story, because at the end of the day, even if it was back when, y'all would have my back today just like you did back then.
Pretty special, man.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, I got one more that stands out to me, and it's about Pudge.
Yeah.
And out there at that Mount facility, we were out there, and they had us start doing line training for whatever reason. And they had a group over there and a group over here. And I'm standing there, and they had the one line come and attack us. I'm just standing there, not taking it serious as usual. And Pudge is my partner. Pudge comes down there and just, I think my shoulder blades were the first thing to hit the ground. He lit me up. I was like, shit, that's how we're doing it.
Oh, yeah, the line training. Remember in the early days, that was like, I remember Sergeant Swale, it was really brutal with that. And then remember, Corporal D came in, and he was trying to do that same thing. Hang, like, how high can I, how hard can I sweep people shit? Dude, I remember, and I talked to Pudge about this when we did a little podcast with him, but he did. Pudge and Lee's were always getting in fucking, you know, I think he was in his squad or something like that. But there's one time we were out in the field and we're doing line training, and the switch and twist and then the drive the knee before you sweep, he kneed him right in the fucking face, man. It was terrible. But Lee's, his whole face is all bloody. He goes, fucking knee me right in the fucking face, man. Yeah, none. Friggin',
you're going to have to give me about 10 or 15 minutes to step out, but I'll be back.
Yeah.
I was planning on getting lunch with my wife and everything and then getting on there at 12. I didn't realize the time change.
No, so, get your lunch and come back.
I will. I'll be back in just a few minutes.
Thanks, brother.
All right.
That's nice, isn't it?
Oh, man.
That's nice. We can get 10 guys on this thing. So I invited Presley. And none and Oster, I don't know if you got it, but I was trying to get everybody together. We'll do more of this where we can get there. He is again, he's popping back in.
Yeah, man, a quick 10 minutes.
He's back. Where are you going for lunch, Adron?
Well, I'm walking this down to, I don't know if you guys have heard of Hometown Show of Laurel, Mississippi. Have y'all heard of that?
Yeah,
no,
well, that's you know, that's where I live, is where the Hometown Shows originated from. And
really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm downtown Laurel. Let me turn you around. This is downtown Laurel right here. This is where the show originated from.
So that's where the there's like the guy who's kind of like a like he's got a beard, and then he's the carpenter, and then the wife.
Yeah,
is the
Ben and Aaron Napier.
Yeah,
Ben is from Meridian, Mississippi. Aaron actually grew up right down the road from me. I've known them all my life. Known her all my life. But yeah, this is my hometown. That show was originated right here in Laurel, where I live.
So, Adron,
town, and we're going to the commissary. Let me turn this around for y'all. It's the commissary here in Laurel.
Awesome.
But I will be back shortly.
I wish that I could be there right now and sit in that chair. I wish we could sit there and just shoot the shit, and get a little cup of coffee. Yeah, come get your meal and come back, buddy.
I will, sir.
Yeah, if you were sitting in that chair, it'd be different than the cheesesteak line when we was up there in Philly and I got punched in the balls. And all that.
Yeah, who was that?
Stone, I think.
Adrian has still got the audio going. He's in the fucking cafeteria. All right, here we go. Go ahead, roll with that one there, none.
We'd all been there waiting, an hour? For a cheesesteak, you and somebody else had went in because the rest of us were drunk and went and got tattoos.
Yeah, yeah.
And, we came back and we were waiting outside. And I mean, I was like dying for that cheesesteak. I was like, dude, I want a fucking legit cheesesteak from Philly. And you or somebody else brought it out to me and handed it to me. And I like opened it up. And by that time I got right in the balls, dude. I mean, he like gave me everything he had right in the nuts and I almost went through the window to the actual store.
It was Oster?
No, it was Stone that punched me, I'm pretty sure. Because, Oster, me and him, I don't think we really beat each other's ass that often. But, yeah, me and Stone, I'm pretty sure it was him that drilled me in the balls. Plus, he's right there at that height. And I remember there was this chick walking down the street, and Mark Grant, Jeff's brother, was there. And the chick walked by and she's like, looked at Stone or whoever done it. And she's like, that was fucking rude. Like, here, I'll share my cheesesteak with you. And I looked at Mark. I was like, see, man, Philly people are great. And then Jeff stole a brick off the sidewalk from Philly.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And I took the tree out of a store and Stone slept with that tree that night because kind of wrapped him up with it. But.
Now, when was that?
That was 20 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, when you guys went to for the birthday?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good time, man.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, we'll try to – maybe this will – one thing that I've been saying and just feeling like reconnecting with folks from the old unit is that it's definitely – folks are watching. We got Adrian involved. When you involve somebody in it and they get on and get the opportunity to reconnect – maybe that'll mean that we can get together, we'll find it more, easy to get together and reconnect and do something. I don't know if I've always thought, even though Philly was like, I'm 30 miles from it right now, but even though it's the birthplace and all that shit, I don't know if it's really made for us. Like, we had a great time. But like,
you just want a break from us embarrassing you up there around your clientele.
I don't give a shit. I wonder if it was like the weapons guys, none saw it. They have this place every year they go in North Carolina, and it's like off the grid. There's a creek rolling right by. So you can just sit there and drink beer, shoot the shit, whatever you want to do. But there's less opportunity for anybody to get fucking arrested or.
I remember you had gotten over us that day because we had been on it all day, drinking, being jackasses. And I mean, you're standing there. It's like, look, quit being fucking assholes. I'm going to the fucking room. Motherfuckers, I work here. You motherfucking assholes. And you're like, I'm going to the room. Like, disappear.
I said that?
Yeah, yeah. And then I think we went and gotten a little scuffle at a bar after that. But
I'm sorry. I shouldn't. I loved every minute of it, but I...
we were being jackasses.
One of the things that I think is cool, but also like it's dangerous, is that like we know each other from a different time, right? So then when we get together, and we what do we do back in the day? We go to the Lucky Lady, we go to the friggin' go to some bullshit out in town, or go down to Myrtle and try to with our medium regs and try to pass off as like civilians and raise some kind of hell. And now we're all 50 years old. It's not as adorable when you're 50 years old and you're drunk fighting each other in the road. But it was, we had some great times doing that. So
another funny thing while we were there, we were all walking down the street somewhere. We had already had more than a few drinks and there was a fight or a scuffle going on like down the street somewhere. And I just kind of picked up my pace and started walking a little faster. And y'all was like, no, come back. And I was like, what, dude, I'm not doing anything. It's like, no, we know exactly what you got in your mind. I was going to go get involved with what they had going on. I was like, yeah, man, everybody remembers I like to get in the middle of some shit or something. But so, yeah, well, it's funny how much we still remember now on how each other, you know, reacted to stuff.
Yeah, no, I remember in Okinawa, we had rooms right across from each other, Presley and I and you. We would get in wrestling matches all the time. And we'd get so mad at each other, then next day we're doing it again.
Yeah. Hey, about the truck incident in West Virginia, I'm trying to remember exactly how.
So my mom and stepdad's house, it was cold, and he was putting in a big bay window, and we were standing on the tailgate of his truck, and at that time not doing anything, and we were, of course, dicking around, and then you went and pushed me, and that truck, the way it was sitting, was pretty high off the ground, and I went off and just landed on my side, knocked the wind out. I mean, I tried to say something. I just, I just remember being so pissed. But I couldn't verbalize anything.
I had a blast up there, man. I know we acted up quite a bit up there.
Nah, not us. No, nah, we'd never do that.
I think we listened to Snoop Dogg all the way up there.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can see. This is my wife's office behind me, all the posters. So yeah. Her and my daughter are big into Dave Matthews Band, and she's been to almost 40 concerts.
Damn.
And so they sell posters at every one of these, and they're not like the posters we would get as kids at Kmart or wherever. They're like the thick cardstock, and so yeah. Yeah. Cool. Dave Matthews has gotten a lot of my money.
I know a few people who do like every year or every so often they have a thing down the Caribbean where it's like Dave Matthews Fest or something, and I like Dave Matthews.
Oh, I do too. And we met him. Well, they met him once when we went down to West Palm. We get down to West Palm and do a concert, and there's the hotel where he stayed at the time. We made some friends on the beach, and they were like, "Hey, we're going over here to the I forget the name of it now, Breakers," and I had no business being in this place. I mean, it's like $2,000-$3,000 for a room a night. So I walk into this place and I'm looking around at this architecture. I mean, the place is just gorgeous. And then about 7-8 feet away from me is Dave Matthews. And I'm like, "Jenny," my wife, "Jenny, what?" I said, "You may want to go there and talk to that guy." "Why?" And I said, and she goes, "Oh my God." And it was on.
Wow. That's amazing. I think
it came back to you.
Huh?
At least she came back to you.
I told her, I said, "You got a free pass. Go get pregnant. We need that child support."
That's cool, man. I can't remember the last concert that I went to. None. You still into heavy metal?
Absolutely.
What's going on? I'm always looking for good, like I hit the gym before I came over here, so I'm always looking for a good angry soundtrack. Any good artists that...
Man, there's so many out there now. You got like Lorna Shore, man. They're heavy as hell. They're mixing it up a little bit now. They're putting a little more melody in it instead of just the straight up heavy stuff.
Yeah.
There's so many, man. It's let's pull up my list here and I can give you an idea, man. I don't know if you ever listened to Atreyu back when they were a little heavier.
Yeah.
You know, they had a deal where they kind of kicked the lead singer out, and, you know, he started up his own band now. It's Dead Icarus, and I love that stuff, man. It's mildly heavy, but it's definitely, man, it's like old school Atreyu, which I love.
What is the name of it?
Dead Icarus.
Hey, you ever listened to, you guys ever listened to, Mongolian techno?
Mongolian techno, no?
That's
no.
Pretty fucking good, man. I'll play some right now. I play it if I really want to get, I'm in my office right now. If I ever like need to get riled up, get things going, it's kind of like, it does the job. Here we go. Throat singing, Mongolian throat singing music.
Wild. It reminded me of Tool until the techno kind of dropped.
Yeah.
It's good, man. It's good stuff, Mongolian techno. So I'll check out those other ones there.
Yeah, the last show I went to, I think, was Slayer on their supposed to be final tour, but I heard they got back together, which is cool. But yeah, I'm still an idiot, man. I still get in the pit, feel like hell for about a week afterwards, but you know, it is what it is. I remember one of my buddies was at Parkway Drive, and he's big time in the MMA, man, super healthy guy and everything. And there's this one big dude there, like when I say big, he's bigger than me. Like, yeah, you know, probably had quite a bit of muscle, but a lot more, groceries hanging around him. And he kept, like, hitting me in the nuts, like, while he's out there jumping around and shit. And I kept telling him, I was like, dude, stop. Get the fuck off of me. About the third time, my buddy Kevin said I grabbed the dude in a chokehold and said I was choking him out. And security came over there and grabbed the guy's arms, and his arms just fell out. He was out. And they drug that dude out and let me stay. And, that was the same night. I started out drinking Jameson on the way up there. I drank a whole bottle of Jameson on the way to the show, which was an hour. And then started doing fireball shots. So I was drunk and ready to go. But, yeah, I took the dude out right there in front of Parkway Drive. I was, like, literally right in front of it, and the whole band's, like, freaking – tripping out over it and shit. So.
Well, I remember you used to do that. There used to be like another voice that would come out of you. Like if you were really mad, you'd say something like, none of your, I love this. I use it. Actually, I don't use it as often as I should, but the term pussy face bitch. Y'all pussy face bitch. You're like, or he'd say, if you're really freaking angry, let's say somebody was really pushing you to the limit, you'd be like, kick your goddamn head in.
Man. I forgot about that. That's great.
Kick your goddamn, or start out slow. Start out like, let's say we're in the back of the, or we're staying out there, circled up and be like, hell, kick your fucking, yeah. I don't know if I don't have to kick your goddamn head in. It's good shit. So Gates, roll with the, you get out, we all get to have that similar experience where we hit EAS and we all head our separate ways. You go home. What is that like? What happens when you get home? How do you feel?
So I was completely unprepared for going home and the next chapter. I'm like, okay, after a couple of days, I'm like, what do I do now? You know, obviously I was going to go to school in the fall and stuff. So I just found a job and I was mapping out power lines. So then it transitioned to another job and another job. And, school for a semester here at West Virginia University at Parkersburg. And that was not going to work for me. Not that disciplined to do that. So just started working, and I was working at this one place, and I remember talking to some guys on break. And they said, yeah, you're in the military. I said, yeah. They said, if I'd stayed in the military, I'd be retired now. Well, I kind of got the wheels turning and stuff like that. So I went and talked to, I knew I was wanting to stay here locally. So I started talking to an Army recruiter. And at that time, they had try one on the guard. So you could do 1 year. And if you wanted to stay in, you could reenlist and that. So I was like, okay, I can do a year. So, and at that time, my plan was I wanted to be a helicopter pilot. My test scores, surprisingly, were, you know, good enough. I could do pretty much whatever I wanted to do. So I did a year, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this. So I signed up for six more years. And, you know, having a young, you know, along the way, we got married, we had a daughter, then got married. So that being a helicopter pilot thing, just that was going to take too much time. And it just wasn't conducive to what with the family and all that right then. So that kind of went away, but I stayed in the Guard. And so I was flight operations, which is it's just nothing cool. So fast forward to 2009. And I was in a small fixed wing flight detachment, and there was 8 of us in this unit. And they took our detachment and all these other detachments from around the country and formed one unit. And we were going to stand up Task Force Odin in Afghanistan. They were already doing this mission in Iraq. Well, we had to go to Fort Benning, spool up, get trained and geared. Well, then the planes that we were going to fly were being retrofitted in Hagerstown, Maryland. And that's where my schooling was as well. So we lived in a hotel that whole time, which was, it was pretty cool. So I was a sensor operator. So, you know, the video feed you see of people conversion on a target and taking them out. I was the sensor operator up there. And OB, if you see one of those pictures I sent you, you see me, the one in the Christmas hat?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was 2009 Christmas. I was on a mission. And so I had in front of me one computer screen of what I was looking at. Then it folded out and there was a moving map with chats and chat rooms where I was talking to customers. I was talking to back to base. And then I had a hand controller too. So I'm typing, I'm operating the hand controller. I got video or audio, 3 different radios and stuff. So that was a cool gig, man. We had to get a top secret clearance. And so we went and I ended up in going to Kandahar first when we first went there. Well, we didn't even have anything in Kandahar. So then they moved me up to Bagram because I was a flight instructor doing that job. So we went up there and I started operating and stuff and doing missions. And so we would go in there an hour prior to a mission and get our brief and see what type of mission it was, because there were some missions where I'm just all video and doing that. There was ones where basically we would fly an L-track and I was babysitting the equipment. The equipment did all the work. So I was the eyes for the guys, what we would have been when we were in the Corps. I was the eyes for those guys and talking to them saying, hey, you got this many military age males in the compound. And so when they would raid that target, my mission then changed where I would zoom out and I would go on what we called squirter watch. So when they would hit them, those guys, those goat fuckers would run out and squirt out in all directions. And I would track them where they were at so they could go after them.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool gig, man. And yeah, then you guys will like this. So I don't remember the date, but we were going up in Northwest Afghanistan on a mission. And I got the mission brief. And I was like, and it was at night. And I was like, well, fuck, we're not doing anything tonight, guys. And I'm like, why? So over a map, it was like a grid over it. We called it a kill box keybad. And I was like, we're going to 93 Charlie Papa tonight. We ain't doing shit. It was just notorious for not doing anything.
Right.
So they have me on a grid coordinate to go watch this compound. And the compound is, you know, their yard. And they would have these fences or walls up around it. And they kept their livestock in there. So in the back of that plane, I sat all the way in the back. And then on the other side of my equipment, there was a signals intelligence guy. And he did this top secret SCI equipment or operated that. And then we had 2 pilots in the front. So I'm up there and I'm watching this compound. I'm recording it. I'm taking pictures. I can change the polarity from white hot to black hot. And there's 3 guys and some cows and some goats back there. Well, two of the guys go inside the house, and that other guy stays back there. And I'm watching this video, and I'm like, what's this guy doing? So I'm changing the polarity. So I'm like, okay. So I yell at the guy on the other side. He's got a screen of it. I said, hey, man, look at that screen and tell me what you see. He goes, is that guy? I said, stop. Don't. So I hit the button. We were isolated from the pilots. And a buddy of mine from home, from my home unit, was up there. I said, Scotty, I said, turn around, look at that screen, and tell me what you see. He turns around. He looks at that screen. He goes, is that guy fucking a goat? I said, that's exactly what I said. I didn't want to say anything.
That video is on the internet.
Huh?
That video is on the internet. Or one
He was taking that goat to pound town.
Get the fuck out of here. Oh, really?
Man. It's on the internet over. So I'll track it down and send it to you.
Oh, great.
Was it recorded in a black hot or white hot? Because I think that was black hot. They were.
I honestly can't remember because I was switching back and forth from it. So, we always carry these external hard drives. So when we had a mission where it was a kill capture mission, we were always recording. And then when we got back on the ground, I would download that, that data into that hard drive and I'd have to take it to the ARST. So I always carried this, external thumb drive with me and I was going to do it and I got scared and I pussied out and I was going to download it to my thumb drive and I didn't do it and I wish I would have, but yeah, that was something else right there.
Yeah.
That's friggin' awesome. Goat fuckers, literally.
Yeah. That's yeah, impressive. They do it.
That's impressive.
I got back. Well, yeah, that was me. I was flying the plane over Africa then.
Hold on, I'm gonna start right here, bro. I just wanna. I got some of these photos that I want to share.
That was me in Africa.
Cool.
And during our brief before we went to Africa, there was a Special Forces unit commander in West Virginia that had just gotten back from there. He said he told us this story how his guys got drunk and they tried to put a shirt on a monkey, and that monkey just fucked him up. So he's told us, don't fuck with the monkeys. And what's funny is, this was our, you can't see it. Well, there it is. There's a sticker on there for our unit, and in Latin it says, don't fuck with the monkeys. Well, my first time off base, this is me. I'm feeding the monkeys.
Did you try to put a shirt on one, though?
No, I didn't. And you can't hear the audio, but I was trying to feed them cheese, and the monkeys didn't like cheese.
They didn't?
No. No.
Did they like chocolate?
They probably would have liked, but oh, look at that.
Adron, Air. Look at Air.
God, you know, big boy.
He's a big boy. You know who he reminds me of? Biff from
Absolutely.
Back to the Future. Such a great guy. You know, I was going to say earlier when Nun and I were talking about the birthday down in Philly, he was like Crocodile Dundee, man. He was walking right across intersections without looking direct both ways. And he's in a big city and he's hating it. He was a little intrigued, but he's happy being up there in Maine, just living his sportsman life, sportsman's paradise. He loves to hunt and fish. And I tried to invite him on the podcast. I got kind of a no answer. So I'm going to have to try to apply some leverage, get him going on there. But I know that if he knew you guys were going to be on, that'd lighten the blow. So who are these gentlemen?
So those three guys, we were all in the same unit at one time together. And then the guy in the orange shirt, Jeff Bennett, he got out before us. He was in that unit before us, and then he got out. Now, the guy next to him, Aaron Reed, in 09, when I was – spooling up to go to Afghanistan, he decided to go early 30s, decided to go Special Forces, try to go Special Forces. And well, he made it, and that dude is a stud. I mean, he's legit. Now he's a sergeant major in the Army and did several tours to Africa, all the stands and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
And then at the same time, when we were doing that, the guy on the opposite side of me, Greg Durth, he went to officer candidate school and then became a pilot. So he's now a lieutenant colonel. So, yeah, so we get together every now and then around here and have some drinks and do what we're doing right now. It's kind of like with what Presley was talking about, how when we got out and then he got another group of brothers, it's kind of the same thing with me. So
that's great. I knew that must be the case.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share some of these photos you shared. And there's your little girl.
Yeah, that was Christmas 09. I'm Skyping with her, my wife, in my basement there. And she got something more than Skittles. So, yeah,
she, you know, just a little flashes of images that come across. You know, I've said this before on these podcasts. You know, social media gets a lot of grief about the downsides to it, but just the fact that I can see that, I know that you've got a daughter and that she was seemed to be really into softball and what's she in college now?
She's graduated college. She was 4 years at a local college here playing softball, and she's graduated and working at Public Debt now. She got a degree in accounting.
Cool. So,
yeah,
I can see the photos. I mean, same thing with you, Nun, your daughter. I can see the photos of your daughter and you, of course, you and your wife there, Gates. I can see, of course, I can see you in her. You know, I can see my friend and, you know, your daughter. I can see the same expressions. So what was going on here?
So I didn't get to leave the base very often when we were in Africa. And what was great about this deployment is we were on a civilian clothes deployment. So because the pilots, they went all over the continent of Africa. So I would go out every now and then just to get out of the office. And if nobody was on the plane, they were like, "Hey, Sean, you want to fly?" I'm like, "Hell yeah, I want to fly the plane." So I got up there and I'd be flying the plane and stuff. And then I pulled that mask down, oxygen mask, and put that on. So
cool. And there you are.
So that was 13. I had just a few days before that got back from Africa. And I was at DMO back at Benning again, and one of my buddies called me and said, "Hey, man, are you going to the W Iowa State game this weekend?" I'm like, "Yeah." He knew I was. He goes, "Wear a uniform. We got a surprise for you." So they pulled some strings and got me down for the national anthem and introduced me down on the football field in front of the whole crowd and told a little bit about my background and that. So that was a big day. That was pretty cool.
That's really neat. Yeah.
So yeah, right there. Probably not supposed to be showing this, but yeah.
Is it a goat fucker?
That was not the mission, but what you see is a lot of the equipment right there. And that screen is the main screen, the camera right there that I would be operating on. What you don't see off the left is where the screen folded out, and I got my moving maps and my chat rooms and stuff like that in there. So
neat.
So that we were that was a bomb, and that was one of the planes we flew in, and I took a flag and flew on some missions with me, and that was my commander right there, Steve Owens, in Afghanistan and Africa, and good friend and super intelligent guy. He's a good storyteller as well. So, and that, ironically, that flag I had put in a shadow box and took it out. My daughter had her senior pictures in high school, had some pictures taken with that flag.
That's very special, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, but yeah, when I got back, when we were getting ready to, at the end of our tour in Afghanistan, they selected myself and my buddy Scotty. He was a instructor pilot, And I was a flight instructor on my job in the back. So they selected us to go back to Fort Hood, Texas early to give real world mission training to the unit that was replacing us in Afghanistan. So we went back and did some of that. And they were feeling me out and trying to give, they were going to offer me a job doing training for new groups coming through. And I was really interested, but, and it was good money, but it was 3 months in Fort Hood, Texas, 3 months in Afghanistan, rotating back and forth. And having a family and a young kid, that was a no-go.
Yeah. Yeah, understandably so. Still pretty cool, man. Pretty cool that you're able to continue to serve. What kind of, you know, because, I mean, the reason why I stopped in the New Jersey National Guard, I think the first reason why I got out, I was heading up to grad school, so it just was a logical end. But again, back then, I was in a grunt unit, and, I mean, this is when the reserves were like stereotypical, like First Blood, where they have no fucking clue what's going on. Like I would go up, we had guys who were, you know, which I thought was cool because everybody can continue to serve, but old, young, scat, fat, skinny, short, tall, but a lot of them weren't, very few were combat ready. You know, here we, I was coming straight out of the Marines. I think I also got a bonus. It was like a $5,000 bonus, which I really could have used at the time to join this guard unit, grunt unit. But I think it would have been cool to see some of the different opportunities. Like Oster was talking about how he stayed and went in the wing. Grant was talking about how he went to the wing and had a different experience and like a comparative experience that would maybe make it a little bit more doable to continue to serve and move towards retirement. Right. Because it would have been welcome. But at the time I was like, all right, from a position of strength here, I'm a grunt. I know what the hell I'm doing. I felt that I did anyway. So I was coming in straight off back to duty. There weren't a lot of guys that were there like that. A lot of guys who have been in this reserve unit their entire time. And so, you know, it was, but I mean, and it also would have meant retraining. Now you went to MEPS and the whole thing, huh? MEPS again?
No. When I went to MEPS, that was before I joined the Marine Corps. But when I got out and not, when we got out in 97, I went into the Guard in 99. So I didn't have to obviously go to basic training or anything like that. I just showed up in my unit. And what was funny is first day at my unit, nobody, of course, I don't know anybody. Nobody knows me. I didn't know what to expect. I show up, you know, obviously in our camis, and they could stand up in the corner, you know, stay float, starch, those things, spit shine boots and all that. And that morning they did, the platoon sergeant did an open ranks inspection. He's going around and he's just ripping these guys' asses. I'm like, okay, this is kind of what I expected in a sense to have somebody do that. But I'm looking around at everybody. I'm like, man, like you said, out of shape, hair, no haircuts, stuff like that. He comes up to me and he goes, looks at me in my uniform and he goes, who the fuck are you? And I told him, he goes, okay. So he went up, closed ranks, and he told me to come up there. He goes, this is how your uniform is supposed to look. I'm like, man, I'm not making any friends today.
Yeah, but it takes a while. But then the unit that I did, that I went in, it was a good unit. There were a good bunch of guys.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting to have had and have explored other opportunities. I think most of us who just did an enlistment in 1-6, that was our experience. And so you hear these stories about guys, oh, I went to here and I did that. I stayed in and I went to this, you know, the air wing, and it was completely different, but in a good way. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because, you know, we all could recollect that there were some unsavory aspects of being in a grunt unit. You know,
it's not conducive to 20 years doing that. That's, you know, you'd have to, I can't imagine being a grunt for 20 years doing some of that stuff like that, yeah. But some people do.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you going in and seeing how those guys were prior to the wars and deployments. Now, after we started deploying and getting, you know, spending time overseas and stuff, it changed.
Sure.
In the units, you weed out the people that didn't want to do the deployments. And you see the guys, of course, in the Army, you know, you got the patches in your unit and then the patches on your right sleeve with the units you deployed with. And, you know, you see somebody with a slick sleeve, no combat patch. It's like, man, why don't you have a combat patch by now?
Yeah.
So.
But that changed pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, it did. And I tell you, the units that I deployed with, some of the most intelligent people, because they have the outside experience of different things, just not one single-minded mindset. So it's you get well-versed people.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. Can you remember, Gates? You remember who were some strong leaders or impactful Marines that you remember from back in 1-6, and then, you know, you talk a little bit about your the units that you were in subsequently, like people that you model good behavior, leadership, and how that impacts, how that furthers a mission, how that changed you, made you want to serve. And
sure, the first person that comes to my mind is Sergeant Suela. I mean, the guy was highly motivated, and at first, I mean, he's intimidating. He was an intense guy, especially being a drill instructor. So, but his leadership and the first thing that comes to mind was a very teaching moment for me was when we were at CACS, and I had a buddy that was stationed there. So I went out there and did laundry and that, well, I missed that shuttle bus and I was late to when he wanted us back, not late. And I was showing up just as the formation. And I made eye contact with him when I'm coming in, and I'm like, I knew I was fucked. Oh, man, I just knew it. I was dreading it. So after the meet, after that formation, he goes, asked me what happened, and I told him. He goes, do you want me to handle this, or you want NJP? I said, I want you to handle this. So we went out back behind those A-frames, and he said, hand me a rock. And he said, that light pole down there, run down there and get me a bigger rock. You got 2 minutes. Oh, my God. Then he just smoked me with flutter kicks and all this other stuff. Dude, I don't know that I've ever been late since then to anything.
Oh, that's a great story. I did not know that.
Oh, he smoked me. And I deserved it. And it was a good life lesson looking back.
This is the first CACS that we went on?
Yes. Yes. Because it was cold.
Was it Sergeant Swaler that made Oster carry the rock in his pack?
I don't know.
The airport.
I don't know.
Because I remember Oster had went to sleep or whatever and forgotten his saw, and it ended up he's like, "Dude, it's your fault. You didn't wake me up." But he ended up having to carry a rock too.
He was great, man. Suela was friggin' awesome.
And he, like us, OB, he went and into the guard.
Yeah.
And I'm certain he retired, and he was a recruiter there for a while. I know that.
Yeah,
that's somebody you got to get on.
He'd come on. I think he's been. I've seen him, you know, some little emoji attaboys, like, you know, he's happy we're doing this. He went. He and Riley, I believe, went down to honor Red.
Okay,
because you hear what happened to Red.
Yeah, man.
Fucking terrible. So I'd like to do, I think it'd be cool to do a podcast in honor of Red. And so maybe that would be a good way to, and we can get 10 of us on here so we can get Sergeant Swale on there and get Riley, get whoever. I also reached out to Brian. I see that he lurks a little bit there. I would love to get Brian on here. He's a funny dude.
Oh, he was, man.
And he was pretty close to Red and Pooh Bear Pemberton. I would love to. He's great, huh?
Oh man, he was a good, great roommate because he and I we were in a room together and we kept that room spotless, had a couch in there. I mean, he was a great roommate.
He's a good guy, man. Freaking love Brian. Love,
still got some pictures of Bryant and Pooh Bear over there. And that one op we went to, I forgot where it was. It rained like hell that whole night, and we were miserable, and everybody was soaking wet and muddy.
That was Italy.
Okay, that one. Yeah, Bryant's standing there with a roll of toilet paper in his hand and just looks like he wants to, like, kill everybody out there.
Dude, that was a miserable field op. I mean, that first night, it was beautiful out there. Then it rained and rained and rained.
Yeah, so I've never smoked so many Marlboros in my life.
I remember, I don't know if it was Italy, but at some point they authorized a non-tactical start a fire, and there was a fire going, and I was bed down right next to it with my poncho over me, and I think that either Brian or Pooh Bear had fire watch, and they were relieving one another, so they're both up there sitting in front of the fire, and I wake up, I'm on fire. My poncho is fucking on fire, and like these guys were watching, and they were waiting for me to, like, you know, waiting for it to get to finally get singed or burned, and they're like, I was like, motherfuckers, and I got up, and I'm like, Rick, you guys fucking throw down, like, you guys let this shit happen to me. That happened. Also, talking about Suela, this is Cax, the first Cax. Holy shit, we were like waiting for the trucks pull up right in back of the A frame or whatever. And we're getting our shit ready, and we're boots, and we head out. I was the last guy out of the hooch for whatever fucking reason. And Doc LaRock, there was a rock with a 550 cord that was like would keep the door shut. So he picks the rock up. It was like a freaking softball. He picks the rock up and lets it swing. It swings through the door, hits me right in the fucking forehead. And I became inhuman. I was like, I was going to fucking kill somebody. I remember Suela telling me, like, calm down. Or I wasn't quite ready to go to BAS, but I was like, that fucking, he beamed me in the head with this rock. You bastard. So.
Yeah, I remember Doc LaRock being there, but I don't remember when he left. And then we got that other Doc. I really liked that guy. He was kind of quiet.
Who's that?
I think he was a ginger too, like me.
Yeah. Martin, yeah.
Doc Martin?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he came home with me one time, like, and fell in love with my sister or something like that, trying to... Kind of like me and, you know, trying to flirt with your sister up in West Virginia.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
that's actually quite common. Pudge was saying that his the guy that he met in SOI came home with him on weekend or some shit, met his sister and married his sister.
Oh, wow.
And his sister, she passed a few years ago, but, you know, they have a bunch of kids and so that's a thing.
What happened to Pudge's sister?
I think she had cancer. This is like 10 years ago. Fucking terrible shit. Which is another, it's another reason why I think it's important to do these podcasts, because there's a lot of fucking, you know, tomorrow ain't coming, guys. We don't know, you know? So I think it's really important you tell people how you feel and to honor these experiences we've had. And I couldn't love you guys more, even though we're separated by the miles and our lives are busy and all that shit. I think it's worthwhile to reconnect, keep the fires burning and try to help if we ever could, you know, or at least be connected, you know? So that's important.
Well, like you said, I mean, I think in another podcast you mentioned, you know, we haven't seen each other in this many years, and it's like we can pick up just where we left off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while I'm thinking about it, you were talking about leaders that influenced me.
Yeah. Keep going.
With Sergeant Suela. I actually talked to him this morning, my buddy that was my commander, that was in that picture with the flag. He was my commander in Afghanistan and Africa, and he was a former state trooper. He's a great man, good leader. I mean, he helped me out in several different ways, more than he knows. And we spoke on the phone today, and, you know, we're giving each other shit. He was a when he retired from the military, he was a warrant officer, chief warrant officer 5. He was actually the chief state chief warrant officer of West Virginia when he retired. And now he teaches college. And yeah, I need to get down and see him and his wife and see them. But just one of those things you can pick up right where you left off. So.
Yeah, it's important to do that, man. I was talking to somebody Friday about, a lot of my patients are female, but I mean, probably 70-30 female to male. You know, guys, it's an interesting thing, but like, you know, our wives or whatever, they'll make time for friendships. They're going off on, they're doing painting with a twist. They're going on a girls' week and they're doing that. Guys are, I don't think, are quite as good with doing that. Like there's something about the male, like, you know, I don't want to talk about things, or, but I feel like we were so close. I mean, some of the things that I remember, people that not different segments of the population, different demographic, but thrust into this experience. And it's not like you have an option. You got to fucking be there on Monday. Right. So we were locked and loaded in the fighting hole together, or in the fucking, you know, out in the miserable conditions. And so for lack of anybody else, family or sweetheart or whatever the fuck, to tell how, you know, talk about things, we talk to one another. So a lot of us, and we're all close. So even the individuals that I didn't even know that well or didn't hang out with, I know enough about them. You know, I know some things about them. I share time with them. And so I think it's really important for guys to share that. And what I think outside of like certain service organizations or the military, there's just really not a lot of chumminess. Guys don't have as much of it.
No, and it's important to talk about that. I mean, talk about things you're that have happened, because about 4 years ago, a guy that was in our unit and deployed with us, I got a call from that Steve Owens, my commander. He calls me one night and he goes, "Zach's missing." He left a cryptic text or voicemail or whatever. And he goes, "We're going up tomorrow." He goes, "You want to go?" And I said, "Yeah, man." So we drove up there to look for him at the last known place he was found, or where they knew he was. And we were out searching for him. And thankfully, he or I didn't find him. Somebody else found him. And he had his own demons, and he took his own life. And, you know, young wife, young son, and just – nobody understands it, at least I don't, what happened there. So,
yeah. So I got a friend of mine in town here. He's a devil dog, served a little bit before. So he was like in Desert Storm and all that shit, but, he's a real, you know, he's a Marine. So he's proud. He's flying a flag for all these wounded warrior things and all that shit. So he reached out to me because he knew I was doing the podcast, and he said, "Hey, there's this guy, he, you know, was in the Corps, he saw some combat, he's all fucked up, he's had some substance abuse issues, and then he got out, and he wants, he's trying to raise awareness for that sort of shit, like PTSD, substance abuse, how rampant it is, and how to evolve and live to tell about it, basically, how to heal." And so I might have him on the podcast pretty soon. I think he's talking about writing a book or something, but he had some terrible shit where he was like holing up in his house, you know, lost his wife, his girlfriend. He kind of ruined all his relationships. He was just in a bottle and he was just holding up in his house and threatening to kill himself. And one of the things, the only thing that averted that was a guy that he had served with that went in, you know, walked past the cops and said, "This is my, you know, my brother," and he had him put his gun down and off he, you know, the guy didn't kill himself. So that's a wonderful thing. Well, so just talking about shit and reconnecting, you know, reminiscing about the day. Also, I think most of us would recall our four years of active duty as a time of strength for us, right? Like we overcome a lot of obstacles, we served, that's something to be proud about. We have all these experiences with our brothers. And so it's worth reconnecting and using that strength. I'll go into Monday flying high from talking to you guys. So that's great. So Nun, pardon me if we've done this already. Who are some leaders or some impactful Marines that you remember from 1-6?
Well, Suela, obviously. And, Whitehurst and Cobb, man, you know, they were there when I first got there, man. And just, I love both of those guys, man. You know, they both had their moments when they would, chew your ass a little bit. And you'd kind of be like, oh, man, dude's being a little harsh. Like one time, you know, we thought we were supposed to go on a 96 or whatever. And somebody pissed Staff Sergeant Cobb's off. I don't know who it was. I think it might have been over the field day or whatever. But he came in there, and he's tapping his foot with his arms folded. And he's like, you motherfuckers thought you're going home, huh? Nope, no limbo. You motherfuckers ain't going nowhere. And he walked out, and I slammed the door behind him as hard as I could and kicked it as hard as I could and ended up on the ground because I almost broke my foot, I believe. But he come back in. He said, you feel better now, dumbass?
Presley's back.
I'm finished. Back.
Hey, real quick, my iPad's about to die. I'm gonna swap over to my phone.
So all right, brother.
Be a little lag there.
Presley, we're just talking. Nothing's just talking about. We're talking about impactful Marines and impactful Marines we served with and leaders, and so. Both Gates and Nun were talking about Sergeant Suela and how good of a dude he was. Who do you remember from back in the day that made an impact on you, positive impact, and leadership wise?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Sergeant Suela was definitely one of them. Staff Sergeant Cobbs, I mean, you have to throw him in there because he was with us for so long. When I got back up, when I went over to SOI, I had a guy named Sergeant, I've sat here and then lost his name. It'll come to me in just a second. If I hadn't asked me, I'd have told you. But he was very, very instrumental in leadership over there, and I spent a lot of time with him. And he taught me a lot there towards the end as far as getting out, transferring back into civilian life, taking what I'd learned in the Corps and applying it to civilian life. And Staff Sergeant Parker, I couldn't think of his name there for a minute. His name was Terry Parker. Staff Sergeant Parker, he was one of the most influential, one of the most influential people that I dealt with in the Marine Corps. And I was also trying to think of the lieutenant, not Lieutenant Rawlings, but
Cooper.
Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, Cooper was a good one.
He's a good
Cooper,
dude.
Cooper was good. I still keep up with him on Facebook a lot. So, Staff Sergeant Cobbs has actually got a Facebook page now, and he found me on Facebook the other day. Staff Sergeant Terry, Terry Parker, I have not been able to find him on Facebook.
No.
You know, funny story about Staff Sergeant Cobb, when Pemberton and I, Pooh Bear and I, were in a room together. You guys remember when I had that snake in my room?
That's right. Yeah.
He was deathly afraid of that snake. He came in, he peeked his head one day for field day, peeked his head in the door. He goes, Gates, where's that snake at? I said, Staff Sergeant. Cleaning last night. He got out. I'm not sure where he's at. He looks around. Room looks good. Well, I knew exactly where that snake was.
Yeah, man. Those field days were friggin' serious with those guys.
Yeah. That was he got drunk one night there at the barracks. And he was in my room. And he goes, let me hold that snake. And he was holding that snake. And you could tell he was not comfortable. But I'll give him credit, man. He held that snake.
Oh, my God. He was the best.
He he was one of the, have any of y'all seen Staff Sergeant Forsman?
So I interviewed him. I interviewed him. He's one of the first people that I reached out to. So he's alive and well. He lives in Jacksonville still. And he does something with testing the gear that recon Marines and special ops or snipers, some sort of sniper package thing. So he's still doing something, working in, as a contractor in some capacity.
He was, I was in a Outback Steakhouse in Meridian, Mississippi. This has been probably 6-8 years ago. And, yeah, Meridian, Mississippi is where we were at school up there. And he comes walking in. There's tons and tons of law enforcement in Meridian that weekend or that week and that weekend. And I got noticed there's a lot of people from out of town, law enforcement from out of town. And he comes walking in this Outback Steakhouse. And I said, I know I'm not crazy, but I know that's who that is. He had three guys with him. And he comes walking over by my table, and he stops, and he looks at me. And I got like 4 or 5 guys with me, you know, and they're all like, man, what's fixing to happen here, you know? And I stood up, and I said, Staff Sergeant Forsman. And he said, Presley. And he just hugs me like there's no tomorrow. And I'm just like, I mean, it's just like breathtaking. I mean, cause it was kind of shocking, you know? And, and he grabs me up, you know, and everybody that I'm with, you know, is like, who is this dude, you know? But so we had a good meeting there. We just, like I said, that's been 6-8 years ago, but we had a good visit that night at Outback Steakhouse in Marina.
So where were you there for?
I was there for some lineman training. It's back when I was going through my lineman program.
So, that's great, dude. He said he had a Forsman. Yeah, I had him tell the story about the one about the Aussie where he was in the bar and the Aussies, they thought he was hitting on a girl. So they beat the shit out of him, and they went to go kick him, and he was on the ground all mangled up. And they were winding up like a soccer kick his head. And the guy, he moved and the guy slipped and his face was right next to his. And he goes, I wrapped my hands around his long hair. And then I locked my teeth on his facial cheek, and I could feel my teeth touching through his skin. And then that's definitely something that he would fucking do. He wouldn't tell the story about Miss Baltimore, Maryland. So I think that's a good thing, because, you know, back in the day, right, his stories were as crude as can be. Legendary. So he's even like mellowed out. He's still Tom Forsman, but he he kind of giggled when I said, hey, tell the story about Miss Baltimore. He didn't want to share that, which it's fine. It's not.
Was y'all with us, or was y'all with me the night we went to the motorcycle gathering he had over there at that house? I'm just reminiscing now.
Yeah. I think he took all of us over there.
Yeah.
I won like a t-shirt that had like Triumph motorcycle or something on it that night.
It was the Armed Forces Motorcycle Club or whatever.
Something he was like hanging around at that time, I think. He wasn't patched up, I think, at the time.
No. That was so funny, man. The duality, the dichotomy of being like this Marine. And then, you know, you got your friggin' motorcycle colors, and how, like, he was something else. He's one of a friggin' kind, man.
I remember I went to church, and a dude walked up to me and said, man, I got a Triumph motorcycle. I want that shirt. And Staff Sergeant Forsman said, well, you're only going to get it if he'll give it to you. I mean, it was just crazy that night. I remember that.
That's great to hear that you ran across him. He said he went to he was in California, and he was in a bar there, and Doug Barry
really
was in the bar, and Barry's got a beard like none, and he retired as sergeant major, but he said he walked up to him, or some guy, Barry walked up to him and said, Tom Forsman, you know, and gave him a big hug, same thing. So that's good shit, man. That's a sort
I've got
of
Barry on Facebook, and what was that, Staff Sergeant
Baker?
Baker. I got him on Facebook. I keep up with him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to commit. Baker's willing to come on the podcast. I'm trying to get Pinberry down. He's also, you know, he's liked some of the posts and stuff, so he's on board. But I don't know if he's willing to come on here.
Y'all need to come down here to this hometown, Laurel, Mississippi, and we'll do a live podcast.
Oh my God, Adron, I'm taking it all in, man, because I watched that show a few times. There's like the wife a redhead.
Oh, she's got a little sandy blonde or reddish blonde hair, strawberry blonde.
Yeah, I like that.
It's really weird that you said that, because as soon as I walked into the restaurant I was going to eat in a while ago, she was in there.
Get out of here.
So,
hey, OB, nod real quick. Look at Presley right there. Does that hair not remind you when he and I and Cox would lighten our hair up in the summer?
I remember Forrest would say, Hey, Presley, we gotta come over here. Hey, Gates, what's going on? None. Where are you at, Cox? Yeah, with the emphasis.
The three non-blondes.
Hey, yeah. Cox.
Cox?
He's another one. He's another one. Good dude, you know, but they're just a little bit after us. So we weren't, you know, we didn't get to really know them as well.
He's in Arizona. He married a fishery and wildlife, like a game warden lady from Arizona. He's living out there in Arizona now.
Cool. Isn't he an airline pilot or something?
Do what now?
I think he was flying for some airline. He was a pilot or something.
What's going on? Doing well. Doing well. See y'all. No. You're good. Good to see y'all.
Oh, look at that. Hometown hospitality. I wish I was there with you right now there, Adron. So are you still got that white truck?
No, sir. That truck has been sold. I drive a F-250 now, Ford F-250.
There you go.
Son, F-250.
I'm going to carry you over here to some people that I run with. This is the Oberst and Nun and the Gates of my civilian life, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, Semper Fi. Who we got here?
This is Mr. Paul Thornton.
How you doing, Paul? Hey.
All right.
Good friends of Adron. He's a good dude.
I don't tell him that, though. That's no. His wife. And then I got my wife down there on the end, Johanna.
Hello. Hope you guys enjoyed your lunch. Adron's he's our inspiration. He's a good man. We served with him for 4 years in the United States Marine Corps. We're just catching up on old times.
So y'all did most of the work for 4 years, right?
Got some old crazy stories.
Yeah, this one right here. Now he don't cut you no slack.
No.
He don't cut you no slack.
An end hole.
I wish y'all was down here, man. This is awesome.
I know the answer to this, Adron. You still don't you don't use swear words or anything like that?
Negative.
Yeah.
Negative.
I always admired that about you, even though we're always trying to tease you and get you to do it because we all had terrible mouths. It was all out of love. I think we all really respected that you had principles. And I think Rumpler, he was always trying to really get you, like, come on. And none. I remember a couple of times he said, Oberst, you're an end hole, son.
I thought he was going to cuss the day that we were on ship over there. And I forget what happened. But you and Zins got into it, and you didn't.
Oh, my God.
Smacked Zins like three times.
Yeah. I never saw you lose your cool like that there, Adron. That was a rare moment where you Zens must have done something really bad to deserve that.
Oh. It happens every now and then, but it's
I'm sure you wanted to do that to me several times, Adron.
Do what, Sean?
I said, I'm sure you wanted to do that to me several times.
Hey, how about Adron? You keep in touch with Seifert?
Keep up with him a little bit. We talk about once every 4 or 5 months.
I would love for him to get on.
He's still up there in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I know you guys are pretty tight.
Keep up with Brant Burns. He's out in Denver, Colorado. He owns an investment company now for airline pilots. Trying to think of the
Sergeant Burns was real tight with him. I can't think of his name. Man, I'm getting old. I can't remember that no more. It was Sergeant Terry. Is it Terry? Sergeant Terry.
He was in our unit?
Yeah, there towards the end. He went to Okinawa. He got in trouble over there. Remember he broke the sign?
Oh, Baker, gosh.
Baker.
I love that dude. Yeah, I was with him when he did that, when that happened. That was, God, you Murphy.
Get the money together or something to get him out of, to pay him out of that deal.
You keep in touch with him?
I keep up with him a little bit, through, and then through Burns, I keep up with him. He's out in California.
Sergeant Murray.
Murray. That's it. Murray.
Yeah,
that's
we're Murray. In, so we're staying at this hostel in Brisbane, and it was this beautiful place. We were in like a, there was like a, almost like a lounge, like a TV room. And for some reason, I mean, we're not in our right minds, but he like scaled down the front of the building, climbed out the window and scaled down like a neon sign and busted it. So we all had to hit the ATM and, you know, fix the sign. But he was a tremendous guy. I'd like to also reconnect with Sergeant Smitty.
Yeah.
He's a good fellow.
Burns' son, Brant's son, he just graduated Marine Corps boot camp San Diego.
Nice. Is he on Facebook?
Burns is not on Facebook. His wife is, but he's got what they call Mile High Investments. You can look him up on the internet and get in touch with him. But he does investments strictly for airplane pilots. That's all he does it for. He has created quite the company. He's got an office there in Denver, Colorado, and one out in California.
That's awesome, man. He's a good dude. I remember he was trying to transition to be a helicopter pilot. Did he?
He was an airplane. He actually flew for he actually flew for several years, and he got into the investment side of it. United, I think, he flew for United Airlines. But he actually flew for a while. And,
it's awesome.
I guess it just crossed my mind. I can't remember what I was going to say now, but he's doing well. Him and Murray's doing well.
What was Murray's first name, you know?
Scott Murray.
Let's see if I can raise him. He was a good dude. I liked him a lot. All right, let's go.
Oh, yeah, what I was going to say was, y'all remember Ryan Buser?
Yeah.
He's got Buser Concrete. You can look him up on Facebook. He's got a phenomenal business.
Isn't that what Pudge does?
Do what?
Isn't that what Pudge does?
Yes. I think Pudge has got a finishing business. I think he finishes concrete.
Okay.
I think he finishes it, and Ryan pours like huge like hotels and stuff, like stories and stories of concrete.
Wow.
He's got a humongous business. And wow. He actually was going to do some work down in Mississippi all the way from Wisconsin. And he never did. And I was going to go up and see him when he got to the state, but he never did.
Was he in Bravo?
Yes. Yep. He's in Bravo Company.
Yeah.
Hey, OB, show Presley that picture. Him, me, Stone, and Wally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, air.
Yeah, and if I remember this, that night of that picture, we actually dressed. If you look, Presley, you were in this picture. I think you were wearing my hat and like my sweater or something. Then we went out to a bar in Wilmington or something.
Yeah, you dressed me up every now and then in that Grateful Dead stuff. I remember. Yeah, you dressed me up every now and then. That's it. That's exactly what I thought you was going to show me. Yeah, that was funny.
Where was this?
We went to some bar in Wilmington or something.
Yeah, it was what was the name of that bar? I know what you're talking about. I remember the bar. I can't think of the name of it.
Because I think I drove that night.
But yeah, that's all your clothes, your hat, your clothes, everything.
Do you remember when we went to some bar? I forget where it was at. We saw David Allen Coe.
Dude,
yeah,
I remember something like that. Was there a guy the manager stick up or went on stage with like a cattle prod?
I don't know.
And threatened. I was somewhere out there where we stopped in this bar. And I thought that there was a country bar-ish, and a guy went on stage with a cattle prod.
That may have been it.
He's like, just
you know, you had Tar Heels there in Jacksonville.
The Tar Heel. I never went there. I don't think I ever went there.
No. You had the Tar Heels, and then you had another one down there in Wilmington. And then we had one when we was over in Okinawa, we'd go to over on that Air Force base. You know, it was like 30 minutes away. We'd have to get a taxi or whatever. It started with an S. I can't think of the name of it. But
oh my God, Jacksonville. Jesus.
Yeah, me and old Pudge just had a couple nights there in Tar Heels.
What do you mean? Raising Kane?
Yeah, me and old Pudge had a couple nights. I remember a couple of times in there with him. He didn't go much, but I remember a couple of times in there with him.
What was the other one? What was the other, like the more of like the like a R&B club that the guys used to go to? I remember guys, we get off on let's say there's no 96. Everybody, if you're not swooping home, you'd see like the guys who were like the country guys, they'd have a couple of them had real like wide brim hats, and they'd be making their way down the catwalk. They'd be heading out. Presley do that a few times. Presley and Burns go out there, and then you got heading out to the Tar Heel, and then they Dark Green Marines and the club crowd, the R&B folks, they would head out to another place. And yeah, I remember they had, I can see their attire right now. Well, kind of like a long sleeve collared shirts and, you know, doing their thing. I can see Whitehurst. I can see Whitehurst getting his duds on, heading out in the town. Oh, kicking. Man,
thought about him in years. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
You don't know? You better ask somebody.
Blat out.
That's a good one. That man used more lotion than anybody I've ever known in my life.
Hey, Presley, the one Nunn and I had spoken before, Gates, you got to remember this too. This is down the birthing in the Ponce.
Oh, God.
So we're all sitting around playing spades or doing whatever in the birthing, getting ready to go to chow. No, it was a morning. So we were coming back from PT or something. Whitehurst showers up. He comes down. His locker's like right here, right as he come down the stairs. And he would stand there completely naked. And he'd face the card table completely naked at the bottom of the stairs, and he put his washcloth right on top of his head.
Right.
And then he would powder himself. He'd be like, he'd take his time powdering himself. And then Nunn goes, "Couple Whitehurst, you're a skinny motherfucker." And then he goes, "Yeah. I'm a skinny motherfucker with a fat ass dick."
Hey, Lord.
And then he just broke down laughing, like everybody, you know, he laughed and so everybody laughed. We're like, "Ah, skinny motherfucker, fat ass dick."
Hey, Nunn, you still in Georgia?
Yeah.
Where at down there?
Thomaston, like central Georgia.
Okay.
Close to Columbus.
I worked about 2 years ago. Might have been last year, 2 years ago. I can't remember. It was in right there. We was right there around Dothan, Georgia.
Oh, okay. So y'all wasn't too far away from
me. Hurricane had come up in there. We was working the north part of Florida, South Alabama, South Georgia, right in that area.
I got you.
How close is that to Atlanta?
I get the hour in about 45 minutes. But
okay.
My main office is in Atlanta, so.
Okay. Yeah, I flew. We were with my wife 2 years ago. You guys, Atlanta Airport. I mean, it's enormous and busy.
Yeah.
We were making our way through there. Came up this escalator, and I looked over there at one of those little eateries, and I'm like, looked over there, and there was my company commander from Afghanistan sitting there. It's and I was like, "Lieutenant Bannum or Major Bannum?" And he goes, "Oh shit, look who it is." I'm like, I mean, as busy as that place was, to see run into somebody like that, that was really cool.
Yeah.
It's very special. What's everybody doing now? OB, I know what you're doing, but what you doing, Sean and Nunn?
I work at an animal pharmaceutical plant, and I've been there for 22 years. And, you know, I retired in 17 from the guard.
Right.
So, doing that, and I was the union president for a while, and now I was coaching softball, travel softball, high school softball, did a little bit in coaching college softball, but I stepped down from all that, so I'm just working now.
Gotcha.
I work for a commercial infrastructure company based out of the United Kingdom, Balfour Beatty. I'm a safety and health and environmental manager.
Gotcha.
And currently I'm filling the superintendent role out there at Davisboro. We're building a new Georgia State prison. And so I'm just out there watching them push dirt.
Cool.
Cool.
Let's do this, guys, because this is a couple hours we're working on there. As stated previously, I'm honored to have you guys on here. I appreciate you taking your time out of your Sunday. And I think it's time well spent. I titled this podcast, you know, the ticker across the bottom, the USMC Brotherhood with Sean Gates. So we'll just end with some closing remarks on brotherhood. But I'm going to flash back to when Presley first came on, when he's sitting in his truck and we're looking at the camera angle coming up as he's looking out the window of his truck. And he's talking about pondering and talking about, you know, the friendships and the brotherhood and the time we spent together. And it was almost like he was articulating that, but he was almost at a loss for words at the bond that we had and still have, can have. Go ahead and freestyle. We'll each go clockwise and freestyle with that there. You start, Gates.
So, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's hard. It's not seeing you guys for so long. You know, I talked to Presley. We'd keep in touch. We kind of lost their touch for a while. But, man, just being able to see you guys, it instantly brings back just the memories. What that 4 years at the time seemed like it was an eternity, like it took forever. Right. But now it was like a blink of an eye. And, you know, looking back, there were so many things I would have liked to have done differently and whatever. But, I mean, the friendships and the bonds that still transcend, and it's and now I have that with another group of people like you do, Presley, when you went to SOI. You know, I have that with some other guys. And it's one of those things, if I ever needed anything, I know that I can reach out and touch base with anybody, and there's help there or whatever, or just an ear to listen to or something like that. And people that didn't serve or get down and have been in a place where times are shitty and tough, and you just got to find the best out of it. And now we can sit around and talk about it and laugh about it. And it's, I don't know. This means a lot, OB, you doing this. And, you know, you talked about leaders who had an impact. You came in with us, but you were always a leader and impactful. So, thank you. But, yeah, this means a lot, OB, for you to be doing this. And that podcast you had with Staff Sergeant Forsman, I mean, I was just so enthralled with that. I mean, he's a great storyteller, and he was a great leader and is a great leader. So, yeah, this is a great thing you're doing, brother.
Thanks, my friend. Go ahead, Adron.
Definitely. Thank you for what you're doing here, man. You've brought a lot of stuff back to life today for me, without a doubt. But you know that brotherhood, man, you know, the stuff back, I mean, everything we've done was pretty much, if it would have been life or death, you know, our lives and everything. And it's really, yes, the way my life worked out, the Lord, what he's done in my life. But, you know, he brought me from that to a place where I still have everybody's hands or everybody's lives in my hands now. I've got a crew that we build power every day. You know, most of what we do is energized. You know, we're holding anywhere from 1,700 volts to 14,400 volts in our hands on a daily basis. And I got these six guys, and I'm, you know, kind of the overseer or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the leadership and the life we lived back then, the brotherhood. I mean, we refer to it still as a brotherhood in the electrical industry. You know, we have a brotherhood, and I got those six guys with me daily, you know, 9 hours a day, and I spend more time with them than I do my family. It's like I did y'all. And, you know, everything my from the day I graduated high school till I'm 49 years old now, everything I've ever done has been a brotherhood, whether it was in the Marine Corps or whether it was in the lineman industry. So, you know, what I learned in the Marine Corps, what I learned from you guys, what we had, I've been able to bring it back to Dixie Electric where I work, and I've tried to instill it in these younger guys that a brotherhood is not just for now, but it's a lifelong thing. When I'm dead and gone or when I retire, they'll still have, hopefully, what I've tried to instill in them, just like what Forsman and all them guys instilled in us.
So. Outstanding, my man. Outstanding. To compliment that, Reisner, he was saying the same thing. He's a lineman up here, and he was a cop before that, and he now he's talking, he said the same thing, same, he's kind of running his line crew like the way that, you know, back in the Corps. Like Forsman used to do shit. He's using some of those isms, you know, like, you know, the that's great to hear that we can repurpose. And I think all of us from our experiences in the service or out, you know, we can extrapolate those experiences and we kind of probably shine them on everything we do. It's a part of us forever. That's pretty neat. Go ahead, Nun.
Man, I mean, they hit it for, you know, better than what I could, really. I'm not the greatest person at telling things sometimes, but I mean, you know, brotherhood, man, it's just, you know, accepting someone for who they are, man, knowing they're going to be there for you, and zero doubts, you know.
I see it, zero doubts.
So, you know, I mean, all different walks of life, man, you know, some of us a little crazy, some of us a little violent, some of us, you know, more calm natured, you know, but we're all, you know, there for each other.
Yeah.
None. One thing
like with Tillman, you know, he made that comment on your Facebook about he couldn't hear my country ass. Well, I'd like to drive all the way to Florida just to pile drive him into the sand so I could have a beer with him afterwards for that comment. And I hadn't seen him in 30 years. So,
yeah.
None. I was going to say, man, I always remember when we came to the unit, you were one of the first ones, you know, coming over there and, you know, making us feel like we're part of it. And you always did that for the newer guys coming in. You know, you didn't know a stranger until they burnt you or, you know, whatever, you know, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah. You're a good dude there, Nun. All you guys are friggin' awesome. So cool. On that note, just winding it down. Appreciate everybody's time. The Marine Corps Brotherhood stays alive. We'll get the Gates. This is kind of like a highlight on you today. So this little review, get out, joins the West Virginia National Guard, serves out his and retires, doing some of his stuff in the air wing side, deploys to Afghanistan. And we had some great conversations, saw some good images about that. So with that being said, love and respect to you guys. I appreciate you, and I'm honored to have had the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you on this Sunday. And I want everybody to have a great week ahead. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, brothers.
Thank you guys. Hey,
and have a great day.
You too. Hey, let's try to do, if it's not Philly or something, let's try to find maybe a neutral point somewhere in between all of us, and do that sometime for a weekend.
Laurel, Mississippi, baby.
That's it, bro.